Hello all, welcome to the Ex-Millennial Man podcast, the podcast for SeedSync.com. I am your host, Artie Kulik, and with me is number one on my draft board. I'm trading up everything I can just to get him, a la Mike Ditka, and that's the greatest other host, Ty. How are you today, Ty?
Hi, everybody. Yeah, I'd be like, so if we're talking basketball, I'd be number 11 in the scorebook, but number one in your heart.
That's right.
How people would describe me.
That's right. Well, this podcast comes out a few days before the 2024 NFL draft. It's in Detroit this year.
Detroit, yeah. Well, yeah. The only reason I know so much is because I, as everybody knows, a big Michigan fan, and all of their fan sites I follow, they keep saying Aiden Hutchinson is going to be the face of the draft this year. And I keep thinking he was drafted 2 years ago. So
we're going to talk about good and bad draft picks. And we're going to start on the bad side because some of these stories are awful.
I'm going to see some bad draft picks. Actually, the day after we record this, I'm taking my son to a Battle Hawks game.
Oh,
so I'll be going to the Dome to see some former plays. The St. Louis Battle Hawks are playing what I think is the coolest name, the Memphis Showboat. So I'm pretty stoked to watch that. But I'm going to be seeing some former AJ McCarron, as you well know.
You know what?
Back of the Battle Hawks.
AJ McCarron, Joe Burrow specifically wanted him to come back after he got hurt. And I think he saw the field one time. And that was because Jake Browning was too geeked up before the game that he didn't hydrate and he got dehydrated.
Boy, wasn't AJ McCarron's girlfriend when Alabama was in the national title the one that Jim Nance was all gross about? Okay, yeah, that's what I thought too.
But with the NFL draft, there's always a lot of hope, and there's always a lot of like reaching and a lot of narratives. And God, who was it that was yelling about Mel Kiper?
I don't like him.
No, it was like the Colts GM or something, because Mel Kiper questioned his pick, and he's like, "How dare Mel Kiper?" Or may he rest in eternal peace, hell, whatever it is. But Al Davis used to do some of the craziest draft things ever. And one day I'll do just crazy draft picks. But today we're doing good and bad, Ty.
All you had to do is be fast for Al Davis wanting to draft you.
Al Davis drafted a kicker in the first round.
Yeah, Sebastian Janikowski.
Now, my son told me kickers have been picked in the first round a lot in like the 1970s. I go, yeah, not in the 2000s.
Not only did he draft a kicker in the first round, but Lane Kiffin. That's right, everybody. Lane Kiffin was a pro coach. Trotted Sebastian Janikowski out to attempt like a 75-yard field goal or something one time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even close. I will say Al Davis was a horrific man, but he is one of the first people who drafted people of color to play in the NFL.
Like I said, I want to talk about, when I talk about good and bad draft picks, Ty, I'm a little bit different in the way I'm going to do it, in that I'm going to pick people that were supposed to be good, but they ended up not being good, or just a very questionable on the team to draft these people to begin with. And then,
see, and the way I'm looking at it is, I saw it because you gave me parameters. You said 1990 or after that. So that was kind of how I looked at it. And the people I picked for both of my things, good and bad, is people I watched for the bad part who I thought were going to be great when they came into the NFL.
So, yeah, and we have a little bit different criteria, which means we're going to probably come at this a little bit of a different way. But Ty, I want to start off the bad picks, though, with a guy who I think was just snake bit. It's just bad luck. And sometimes that happens. And I feel bad for saying that this person's a bad draft pick because it really wasn't his fault. But everybody's going to bring it up. So I figure I might as well bring it up. And that's Steve Ettman.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember the name and everything. And was he the first overall
pick? He was the number one pick.
By the Colts,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the Colts. And he was.
What happened to him? I forgot his story.
So Steve Ettman had an incredible college career. Okay, he went to, I believe he went to Washington. They won the Rose Bowl.
Because they played Michigan in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, they won the Rose Bowl. He was just physically a perfect specimen. He skipped his senior year to come into the draft. I mean, the reason why I think it's weird, it's, you can't really say Steve Ettman is a quote-unquote bad or, I mean, he didn't have a great football career, but anybody would have picked him number one. Like, I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to talk about Ryan Leaf on this because, again, yes, a bad career, but everybody would have picked him number two.
Mm-hmm.
But Ettman, his name comes up a lot because he played, I think, 3 years.
That's it?
Yeah. He only started 19 games due to injury after injury after injury. And it was, I mean, it was awful. He played most of his games on AstroTurf. A lot of people thought that might have been the problem. Washington, they played on a real grass field. And it just, he tore his patellar tendon midway through his first year, then tore it again his second year.
Oh, man. That's brutal.
Just a snake-bitten career. There's just nothing you can say about what he did. But I know everybody's going to say, how could he do this and not bring up Steve Ettman? Kind of the same thing with Tony Mandarich. Yep. He was the second pick in 1989 of the Packers. His issue steroids, was steroids, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, once he stopped taking steroids and realized he had to play real players, that's when things got not so great for him.
Right. And he was overtly big because of steroids and stuff. I know famously with Mandarich, I think it's like he was the second pick, and I think the first pick, and then like all the picks up to number seven after him are all in the Hall of Fame.
Sounds about right. That's like Darko Milicic being picked before Carmelo Anthony and Dwayne Wade and guys like that. Yeah.
So I wanted to bring up Ettman, but I want to hear your thoughts on some of these bad draft picks before I get to the dark stuff.
Yeah. So like with me, like I said, I kind of looked at these people as, and this is why I could never be a, whatever Mel Kiper calls himself, his fake ass job that he has, whatever. I could never do that because I was going through and doing notes, and I could have said Cade McNown, who I thought was going to be the next great thing. He was a left-handed QB. He was a left-handed Troy Aikman is what I thought, but I left him off because people will talk about him all the time. But when I look at just straight up quarterbacks that I thought were going to be awesome, you have a guy like Josh Rosen, who I thought he was going to be great. I loved his attitude and how like he had interests outside of football, and people thought, oh no, that won't work. And they were right. It didn't work. He was the 10th overall pick in his draft. 10th. Now, there were some QBs taken ahead of him, namely Baker Mayfield, but Rosen, I don't know if he ever started more than a handful of games, and he was pretty much in and out of the league quick. I think he's out of the league now. I don't even know what he's doing now. But then you take a guy like Kenny Pickett, which I thought great. People kept saying, oh, he's got small hands and can't read defense. I'm like, that doesn't matter. The kid tore it up at Pittsburgh and had one of the coolest moves I've ever saw in a college game, where he faked that slide and then got up and ran it in for a touchdown. But 22nd overall pick. Dude's already been traded, and for some reason he thought he was better than Russell Wilson and Justin Fields when Pittsburgh traded for them. So that's why they traded. I don't even know where he plays now.
I want to say it's New Orleans.
Maybe that's right. Yeah. I couldn't tell you. He's only been in the league for 2 years, and I already feel like he's a wasted pick. But then I want to dig a little bit deeper now. Zach Wilson is a name that will come up a lot. Yep. And I do think that kid had super duper talent out of BYU, but also, again, I root for Power 5 team.
He lit it up in the COVID year, though.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, I root for a Power 5 team, so I watch Power 5 teams closer than any other teams. It's like, you played at BYU. Like, Ezekiel Ants tore it up when he was there. And he was a good enough NFL player, but wasn't as great when he ever was at BYU. But there's two quarterbacks. Now, one of these I think you might know based on your fandom. Christian Ponder out of Florida State. The Minnesota Vikings took him 12th overall in his draft. Yeah. And this is when Florida State wasn't great, but they weren't as bad. I know last year they went undefeated, but they had some down years. Christian Ponder, I thought, was he could scramble, he could throw, he read defenses in the ACC rather well. I thought he was going to be great. I don't know that he lasted more than 3 years in the NFL. But one that really stuck out to me when I was doing research for this was Matt Jones, quarterback from Arkansas, who played a little bit of receiver. He was this hybrid, hyper-talented. He can do both, and you can put him in. He was like Taysom Hill before Taysom Hill. But the problem with a Matt Jones is, A, he was way overdrafted, 21st overall pick in his draft, which for a guy we really don't know a position, that's like taking a kicker in the first round, as you mentioned at the top. And then for him, he had massive substance abuse issues that he just couldn't get over. So it's clearly this guy is a talented athlete, but he has problems with substances. He can't get over it. But Jacksonville's thinking, well, we're going to take him in the first round. Then he has to go live in Jacksonville, Florida. And it just never materialized for him.
There's a couple of quarterbacks I do want to highlight. And I'm going to specifically look at the 1994 draft. Okay. Now, this is weird to me because I could have done this entire first half could have just been Cincinnati Bengals in the 1990s.
I'm actually going to talk about a Bengal once you go through your thing.
Yeah. This draft, the Bengals picked first. The Bengals were the worst team in football in the 1990s, so they were picking first quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But Dan Wilkinson, who is a defensive tackle.
Yeah. I remember him.
Yeah. He played at Ohio State. He's from Dayton. Again, the first pick of the Bengals, and I think it was after his second or third year, he was talking about how he hated Cincinnati and he wanted to get out because it was a stupid, racist city. And he kind of
grew up in Dayton. He should know.
Yeah, which if you're from Dayton and your dog in Cincinnati, you have something wrong with you. But the pick right after Wilkinson, Marshall Faulk.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And out of San Diego State. It always blows my mind. That's where he played. But
oh, yeah.
The third pick of that draft, at the time, the Washington Redskins went with Heath Shuler.
Oof, rough stuff.
Now, the reason I bring up Heath Shuler is in that exact same draft, in the seventh round, they picked Gus Frerotte.
Oh, man.
Midway through Heath Shuler's second season, he was benched for Gus Frerotte.
And Gus Frerotte would go on to slam his head against the stanchion after a touchdown in a preseason game, I believe.
Yes.
And concuss himself.
So Heath Shuler, just a big arm, all this other stuff, but never really took off in the NFL. Do you know what Heath Shuler did after the NFL?
Isn't he like a super famous real estate guy?
He did banker? Real estate, and he was a Democrat in the U.S. Congress for like 6 years.
Right on. Good. I like Heath Shuler now. That's awesome.
But some of the people picked after Shuler. Willie McGinnis was picked directly after him. Bryant Young was picked a few picks later. In the top of the second round, Isaac Bruce was picked, and then Kevin Maway. I can't say his name right.
Maway or something. Yeah, I know.
Both Hall of Famers. Uh-huh. Larry Allen was picked in that draft after
him. One of the greatest linemen ever.
So Heath Shuler. Heath Shuler never even made a Pro Bowl. But
hey, man.
You know
at
what?
At least he's a Democrat. He's on the good side.
He found his second calling. I don't know if this was a quarterback you were going to talk about, but Akili Smith.
I wasn't going to talk about a Bengal quarterback. I have another Bengal talk about in this. But yeah, I loved, again, I believe Akili Smith and Cade McNown were in the same draft. They were my two favorite quarterbacks of that draft. I couldn't have been more wrong about the two of them.
People around my age that grew up here in Cincinnati, I did not grow up in Cincinnati, but Akili Smith is kind of like a shared scar. Everybody has an Akili Smith story. Akili Smith was out of Oregon. He was out of Oregon.
Yeah.
Again, had all of this talent or whatever it may be. And the Bengals went out and they had the third pick. And they were like, well, we want a quarterback. So this was the draft that Ricky Waters was in. And Mike Ditka.
Ricky Williams.
Oh, Ricky Williams. Sorry. Yeah. Ricky Williams.
Yeah.
And Mike Ditka really wanted Ricky Williams. Mike Ditka was the coach / GM of New Orleans. And he went to the Bengals and offered them 9 picks.
They should have taken it, man.
And the dumb thing about it, this is the 99 draft. The dumb thing about it is no one else was drafting Akili Smith that high. Now, this was a draft where Tim Couch was taken number one. And I think it's unfair to go after quarterbacks of expansion teams.
Oh, but Tim Couch wasn't good, though.
Yeah.
He was a Kentucky product. Yeah.
Donovan McNabb was number two, who was booed mercilessly by the Philadelphia faithful when they got him.
People underrate Donovan McNabb. He was awesome.
And then you had Akili Smith, and you had Edgerrin James taken directly after him, and then Ricky Williams. So here's the thing.
They could have taken Edgerrin James or... Oh, man.
No, but here's the thing. No, it's they could have moved. They could have taken that number five slot for New Orleans, gotten Akili Smith.
And
a couple players even after that. Torrey Holt from the Rams was after that. Champ Bailey was directly after Torrey Holt.
Man. Two Hall of Famers.
Yes. Dante Cole. Well, no, Torrey Holt's not in yet. He should be.
Oh, well.
He's always like that one guy looking out right now. But,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, Champ Bailey, who is arguably one of the greatest cornerbacks in football history.
Yeah, he's amazing.
So it wasn't just that Akili Smith was no good. I think his time with the Bengals, 3 years, he threw 5 touchdowns and 13 interceptions.
Oof, Magoof, that's rough stuff, man.
It's that they could have completely transformed their team.
Now, if they had done that trade, and this is a person I cannot stand outside of their football playing life, but that would have been akin to what I think, was it the Vikings who traded everything for Herschel Walker?
Yes.
So it would have been the same thing.
The Cowboys got 3 Super Bowls out of that.
Exactly. And the Bengals could have transformed their franchise had they done that.
And one more quarterback I want to talk about, because we just got to talk about this because it's just, I just don't understand it, is Jamarcus Russell.
He liked lean, dude. He liked drinking purple drink. The dude didn't want to. So the thing with Jamarcus Russell is I watched him at LSU. And I should say, I didn't watch him. I watched one game he played. It was their national title that it wasn't, was it less? I think Les Miles was the coach when they won that national title, but they played against Ohio State. So obviously I was rooting for LSU, and Jamarcus Russell looked awesome. But you even heard stuff about him back then as, oh, he doesn't like to watch film. He won't stick to a diet, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, he gets first overall pick to the Raiders, still doesn't want to watch film, realizes he likes lean and drinks it all the time. And it was a mess from the start. All the arm talent in the world, but just didn't want to put in any work.
No, and that's exactly it. That's where the bust he is. Is he showed up, I think his second year, he showed up in the training camp like weighing 280.
As a quarterback.
Yes.
That's, people who are listening may not know he was a quarterback.
Also, he held out. He did He did not sign a contract till after the season had started.
Jeez Louise, man. He probably is a guy who got bad advice from somebody. And just when you get to that level, you have to put in the work. You can only fly by on so much talent until you're playing with everybody who's just as talented, if not more talented.
I'm going to talk here. I've got two more that are pretty rough stories, but before we get to those, do you have any other?
Yeah, I have two more. They're actually two defensive players. The first one I want to talk about is another Ohio State guy that we seem to be talking about a lot on here, and it's pretty clear that everybody knows I like Michigan. Jeff Okuda, who I thought was this great.
I don't remember.
Oh, I thought he was this great transformative. You don't remember him as part of the problem. Yeah. I thought he was going to be the next great cornerback. When I watched him play at Ohio State, especially when they were whipping Michigan while he was there, I'm like, man, this guy is the next Charles Woodson. Just, he didn't play offense or anything, but he was fast. He could read defenses, or he could read offenses really well. He hit hard. The Lions took him third overall, and he did nothing, nothing at all in the pros. Like, I don't know if he's in the league anymore, because he was drafted relatively recently. This wasn't that long ago, but he just completely flamed out. The Lions moved on from him, and they're clearly better off where they are. But the Bengal I want to talk about is, this is a tricky situation, because he quote unquote flamed out or was a bust because he got hurt.
Yeah.
And that's David Pollack.
Yeah. He had to get his neck fused.
The neck thing. Yeah. But the issue I had with this, so David Pollack was a fantastic defensive end at Georgia, one of the best that college football's ever seen. And the Bengals took him 17th overall, which back then that was pretty crazy to take a defensive end that high, but he was going to change the fortunes of him. And yeah, he just suffered this weird freak neck injury. And now he's on College Game Day or one of the ESPN shows. But my problem with him is that he constantly berates women on that show. Yeah. So it's kind of like, I want to feel bad for you for what happened to your pro career, but then you're on TV and you're on TV all the time and you're saying these horrific things. So I just wanted to put him in there because it's like one of those weird situations where an injury cut his career short, but he's like the opposite Heath Shuler, I guess is what I'm going.
Yeah, no, he is. And somebody didn't bring up his Kijana Carter. It goes with the Steve Ettman thing. He wasn't bad. His knees exploded early in his career.
Yeah, he destroyed like both of them.
And that's another one. I mean, the Keeley Smith one was more like what the Bengals could have had if they would have done it. But okay, Ty, there's in the early 2000s, Matt Millen was the GM of the Detroit Lions.
Oh, I'm well aware. You have cousins who are Lions fans. So.
And Matt Millen was a very good player.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, did he like drafting wide receivers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he's like the new age Al Davis.
Yes. Now, he did draft Calvin Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but in that time period, getting all these wide receivers, there's one particular draft that it was a 2003 draft, and there were two receivers that were rated really high.
I know. Charles Rogers something is a guy.
Yes, Charles Rogers out of Michigan State, grew up in the area. And then Andre Johnson out of Miami.
You got it. Sorry, my Michigan fandom showing. You got to take Andre Johnson. But anyway.
And while Charles Rogers was at Michigan State, there were some substance abuse issues.
Mm-hmm.
But Matt Millen, with the number two pick, went after Charles Rogers.
Yep.
Ty, I'm going to read you his NFL career.
Okay.
2003, games played, 5. 22 receptions for 243 yards, 3 touchdowns. 2004, 1 game played, no stats.
Boy.
2005, 9 games played, 14 receptions, 197 yards, 1 touchdown.
Ugh.
That's his career.
Jesus, that's like a game for Calvin Johnson when he was there.
Number 2 pick. He was out of football, had a lot of drug problems through his life. He died at the age of 38 of liver failure.
Oh, good God, that's brutal. That's the thing. You and I talked off mic too. A lot of these people that we might not even bring up today, they're like dead now.
Yeah. So the St. Louis Rams.
Yeah. Do you remember when that guy said they lead the league in pissing people off?
Yeah. Yeah. When we went to that game. When the Rams first came to St. Louis, they weren't good.
No, they had, not at all. Tony Banks, dude.
Yeah, but their quarterback was Jim, not Chris Everett.
Oh, yeah.
But they did have a good running back in Jerome Bettis.
Sure, yeah.
And Jerome Bettis
wanted the hell out of here.
Yes, he wanted out. But here's the thing. The Rams didn't have to trade him.
No.
They didn't have to. But they did because in the upcoming draft, this would have been, I think it's the 96.
Okay, yep.
In the 96 draft, there was a Nebraska running back named Lawrence Phillips that was going
to
be
available. Oh, my God. I used to know where he lived, right by the high school I went to.
Now, Lawrence Phillips missed the second half of his final season at Nebraska. Do you know why he missed it, Ty?
Was he in jail? Did he assault somebody?
He assaulted a student. Yes, a woman. Yeah. So he was kicked off of Nebraska's football team.
That's right, yep.
All right. So it's got to be pretty damn bad what he did. But
yes,
dude had stats.
But he was a good running back at Nebraska. Yep.
And the Rams at number 6, much to everybody's chagrin, like, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Picked Lawrence Phillips. Now, predictably, Lawrence Phillips was a pile of garbage.
He ended up in prison. Didn't he die in prison?
So, yeah, here's the thing. He played his NFL career, I think, was like a couple of years. He played in NFL Europe and the Canadian Football League. Oh, it says here in 99, San Francisco brought him back. I remember that.
I don't remember that.
But St. Louis, number 6 pick in the draft. Yeah. St. Louis, he was gone after midway through his second season. One time, didn't he try to run over some kids or something in his
neighborhood? Yeah, he also lived in a gated neighborhood, and he would try and like drive through the gate all the time and stuff. It was a big, where I live right now, he lived not even 5 miles away.
Well, Lawrence Phillips ended up going to jail on a murder charge, and then he killed his cellmate while he was in jail, and then he committed suicide.
Yeah, this was clearly he had mental issues that he wasn't properly dealing with, so football was an outlet, but even that became a problem for him.
Yeah, so. And we knew.
Everybody
knew. He was a problem, and the Rams took him number 6.
You have to do, especially at that time with Nebraska, when they were playing for national titles back then, you have to do something truly awful to get kicked off of their football team.
Yeah. Yeah. I just unreal. I mean, Lawrence Phillips was one week older than I am. Okay.
Jesus.
I
didn't realize that. That's crazy.
All of the talent in the world. Now, what's weird about it with all that stuff, I think it was the very next draft, the Rams were picking at the top again and they got Orlando Pace.
Yeah.
And then they traded for Marshall Faulk. Then they got Torrey Holt, and then Trent Green's knee exploded, and
Jake Vermeil cried on national TV. Yep.
And this Kurt Warner guy came in, and that was the one thing I'm like, God, I sure as hell hope that Lawrence Phillips was not on that Super Bowl team, and he was not.
No. It's funny, you with Orlando Pace, too. I don't know who hosted the ESPYs that year, but I will never forget when they were interviewing Charles Woodson, because Charles Woodson won something, and they asked, you know, Orlando Pace about all the pancakes, and Charles Woodson said, well, I guess we ate a lot of pancakes that day. I'm like, yeah, was the last time Michigan won a national title.
Well, and I say in celebration of O.J. Simpson dying. Oh, it wasn't Charles Woodson. Maybe it was Reggie Bush. When Norm MacDonald was hosting the ESPYs, he said something like, oh, you
won
the Heisman.
He's like,
you won the Heisman. They can't take it away with you unless you murder your wife and her friend.
Yeah, no, that was Charles Woodson because, that kept popping up on all the Michigan fan pages.
Man, I miss Norm.
Me too, dude.
Hello all, this is RD, and I want to talk to you about something called Public Forum Productions. Now, you've heard me reference it, and if you are a person that looks deep, deep into the notes, you'll see that Public Forum Productions actually is the producer of The Ex-Millennial Man, the podcast you're listening to right now. Well, 2024 is going to be a big year at PSP, and I want to invite you to become part of that. Go to publicforumproductions.com, and you can see the stable of shows we have. It's a network, kind of like, think of it like Netflix, and Ex-Millennial Man is one of the shows. We also have High Heels and Politics, First Watch, Rewatch, and coming in 2024, we already have two shows actively in production right now. One is called Where Did You Go to High School? I know a lot of our listeners are in the St. Louis area and are in Southwest Ohio because you guys know Ty or myself,
And that's the biggest question. Where did you go to high school? For the record, I went to Lafayette High School in St. Louis, in the St. Louis area. But it's a big, big deal. My son here in Southwest Ohio goes to a really well-known high school, and it kind of identifies who we are. Also, the other show we have working on is called Satan Remembers. It's a history of the 1980s Satanic Panic. That is where we're done planning it. We're getting ready to record, do interviews and stuff. And I want to really make this good. It's going to be a series that's going to go through what happened in the early 1980s and kind of the moral panic and the accusations of Satanism that destroyed a lot of people's lives, destroyed a lot of people's businesses, and all were completely unfounded. And I want to do that now because a lot of what we saw 40 years ago, we're seeing today. So I think it's very important. Again, go to publicforumproductions.com, reach out to me. And if you want to be a guest, if you want to do your own podcast, if you have information that can help us with these things, because like I said, those two shows are currently in production, but we have a few that are in pre-production, and I'm going to really need some voices for there. So again, publicforumproductions.com, and let's get back to the conversation.
Okay, Ty, before we talk about the greatest draft picks ever,
round picks, not the greatest draft picks ever.
Well, I'm going to tell you, everybody I have is first round, and I'll explain that. But
okay, I went the total opposite.
No.
I figured sleepers with mine.
Yeah. I figured we would. But look, the truth of the matter is, I'm going to make an argument at the end that Tom Brady is the second best draft pick ever.
Man, people in New England, Tampa, and anywhere else are going. My wife was going to be mad at.
Yeah, but you're gonna hear my.
Well, again, I'm a Michigan fan. He is not top five of Michigan QBs of all time. And that's no disrespect. He wasn't a great college quarterback. Mm-hmm.
No, right.
Excellent NFL quarterback.
But look, he's probably the greatest draft pick ever. He's drafted 199. And
sixth round.
Yeah. Now, the reason I bring that up, because I want to put that out there right away, and I didn't put this on the bad side, but do you know who Giovanni Carmazzi is?
No, is that Tommy DeVito's agent's name or something? I have no idea.
I don't remember this at all, okay? Well, Steve Mariucci, who was the coach of the 49ers at the time, Bill Walsh was the GM. And Tom Brady grew up in, like, the San Francisco
area. Yeah. He's a huge 49ers fan growing up.
And the 49ers needed a quarterback. So when they went at the 65th pick, they decided to get a quarterback, and they could have taken Tom Brady, and they took Giovanni Carmazzi.
And Tom Brady went 134 picks later.
Yep. I just had to bring that up, okay? Because I never heard of that dude, and I was like, holy crap.
Well, and you're met Steve Mariucci, who is a fine NFL coach, and Bill Walsh, who is a football genius.
Yes.
So that's wild to me.
I'll start here so people know what I'm getting at, and then you have your things. I do want to, because I wanted to see who are the players we thought were going to be good, and they became great.
Yeah.
And outside of the guy I'm going to talk about last, I think, and I know I told you like 1990, I have two guys from the 80s on here, but one of them in particular was the number two draft pick of, it was like the early 80s. I think it was 81. When I say number two, that this guy was maybe underrated. If you look at his career, the person I'm talking about, Ty, is Lawrence Taylor.
Oh, greatest defense. Again, I'm a Charles Woodson apologist. I think he's the most versatile defensive player ever. Lawrence Taylor might be the greatest. He's the greatest defensive football player to ever step on.
Had Charles Woodson as somebody else, too. But I think I remember that was the same draft that Peyton Manning was in.
Charles Woodson was the fourth overall pick.
Yeah, I don't think you question the Peyton pick. But maybe he should have been, too.
The Raiders needed a defensive back.
Yeah.
So.
Lawrence Taylor, I mean, the person selected ahead of Lawrence Taylor, it was a Heisman Trophy winner out of South Carolina named George Rogers for the Saints, who had
nothing. It's like Sam Bowie going ahead of Michael Jordan.
Yes.
That's what you have
here. Yeah. And also, I want to make special mention, number eight in that draft, Ronnie Lott.
Oh, my God. Two of the greatest defensive players to ever play.
I mean, that is a loaded draft. But so those are my standards I'm going to talk about. Give me a couple of the guys that you found.
And real quick before I get into mine, too, I listen to this podcast called Foosballs, where comedy writers talk about football. And they always tell this great story about Lawrence Taylor, who, like, how good and how athletic he was and naturally gifted is he went out partying all night on a Saturday thinking it was a Friday, drove by MetLife Stadium, saw fans in the crowd, was like, oh, crap. drove back and went and had like four sacks.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing with Lawrence Taylor. We talked about the end of the first half, these people's substance abuse problems, which Lawrence Taylor had.
Oh, yeah. He got cleaned up, though.
No, he did. But he said he forgot. He doesn't remember the NFL draft the day he was drafted because, quote, he drank 41 Coors that day.
Oh, my God. That's a lot of Coors to drink in one day.
All right. So now I hand it to you.
Yeah, no. So when we talked about this, that's what I was kind of like, I'm going to go for football people definitely know. Even some casual fans will know some of these names. These were people who were not, they were like Tom Brady. They weren't highly regarded people. So, and the first one I saw was Terrell Davis. Terrell Davis was a sixth round pick in 1995. Sixth round. Terrell Davis is one of the greatest running backs to ever step foot on a football field. I told you off mic that if it weren't for him, John Elway would not have Super Bowls. Terrell Davis and that offensive line were really the key to those Broncos teams. And I remember I hated those teams because they beat the Packers. The year the Packers, one of the seasons the Packers were surefire Super Bowl pick, and they got beat because they could not stop Terrell Davis. And getting a guy like him in the sixth round is such a value pick. It was so important and key to the Broncos becoming what they became in the late 90s with that. And I do got to give love to the Packers. Donald Driver, one of their best receivers ever. When I think of Packer receivers, it's Sterling Sharp. It's guys like that, quiet guys who didn't put a big... That's Donald Driver. Donald Driver was consummate pro, did everything the right way, played football the right way, was an excellent, reliable, durable receiver. He was a seventh round pick in 1999. There's only seven rounds in the...
Yeah.
I know there used to be like 20 rounds in the NFL draft. There's only seven rounds in it now. To get a guy like him in the seventh round was just amazing to me. But there's people that I started playing fantasy football when I got out of high school. There's people that I looked at, people who put up numbers. I'm like, oh, I want to pick this guy, or I'm going to try and get this guy in the 10th round of my draft. And a perfect name for that comes to mind for me is Darren Sproles from Kansas State. Drafted, I think the Chargers drafted him, maybe. Mm-hmm. Small, teeny tiny
he
running back.
He was awesome at K-State.
Yeah, he was great. So and good. Like, but he was like 5'6" when he played, and just so small. He was a fourth round pick. And this is a guy who had like a 15-year NFL career. Wasn't your best option to hand the ball off to and just have him run ahead, but he was like a smaller version and a not as good, but a similar player to Marshall Faulk. He was one of these running backs that I watched who not only would they bounce runs outside and then get like a 40, 50-yard touchdown run, he would have 10 catches in a game and it'd be like nothing. It's just like, oh, Darren Sproles, 10 catches, 80 yards, 7 carries, 50 yards, 3 touchdowns. Like, oh, that. And I think for a fourth round pick, that's a damn good pick to get. But the 06 draft is kind of where I really hit some big time stuff with me here. So Brandon Marshall was a fourth round pick in the 06 draft. Brandon Marshall was one of the better receivers, again, to play for the Broncos. I believe he was there when Peyton Manning was there, and he was a reliable target for Peyton Manning. But Brandon Marshall was just kind of your prototype looking wide receiver, tall guy, good hands, decent route runner, fourth round pick. And then you go to a guy like Marquise Colston for the Saints. Now, your wife being a Purdue grad and Drew Brees playing there, Marquise Colston was one of his main receivers. He was a sixth round pick and he stuck around, had like three of the greatest fantasy years that anybody could remember. But the last 06 player I had before I get to my final two players is Elvis Dumervil, which when I said to you, I'm like, do you remember? You said you remember that name. He was another one of these like Brandon Graham, Dwight Feeney type defensive ends who are undersized. And he was super young when he came into the NFL. I remember he was playing. He was like when he was a sophomore going into his junior year of college, he was still 19 years old. He was a 5-time Pro Bowler. He ended up sticking around the league forever. He was a 4th-round pick in 06, but the final two I want to finish off my little part with here are two members of the Legion of Boom. And as you well know, I was not a Seahawks fan when they were winning the Super Bowl.
No, they were great.
Yeah, and that was the only time I like openly rooted for the Patriots in a Super Bowl. But it wasn't the Legion of Boom that I disliked. It was Russell Wilson, who, again, he's a good quarterback.
But the cult of Russell Wilson is annoying.
Yeah, Russell Wilson, good enough quarterback. I just was never a fan of his, but they got two guys, one guy in the 2010 and one guy in the 2011 draft. The 2011 draft was Richard Sherman, who they got in the 5th round. Now, I know he's had his issues and everything.
No, but I mean, as a player, right? No.
Yeah. But he was a 5th-round pick out of Stanford. Super, super intelligent dude, just like on and off the field. But he just knew how to read offenses and knew how to like goad people. Like, you go back and watch him yelling at Aaron Andrews about Michael Crabtree. Mm-hmm. Michael Crabtree, who was a great receiver when he played, man, Richard Sherman knew how to get under his skin. But I think my favorite player from that Legion of Boom, the one that I, when I was looking and doing research, I'm like, oh, I can't believe the Seahawks got him. Fifth round pick in 2010 was Cam Chancellor. Nobody has hit as hard. He is like a taller Ronnie Lott. That's kind of the way I look at Cam Chancellor, is this dude, you do not want to get hit by him. You do not want to see him coming over the middle to just destroy you on a slant route that you're running. He was as feared as Bobby Wagner was with that defense or any of the other linebackers that they had there. And the fact that they got Cam Chancellor in the fifth in 2010, Richard Sherman in the fourth in 2011, and those are two of their main building. And the Legion of Boom, the whole thing came from that secondary. It was that secondary that did that. So the fact that they were able to get these guys and spot this talent. Again, I don't like the Seahawks, but they know what they're doing when they're drafting on that end of the ball.
No, they did. They absolutely did. But
yeah,
I'm going to go a little bit of a different direction right now, and I'm going to talk about players who had all the talent in the world, but the evaluators were like, is it going to be in the NFL? But we're going to take a gamble. Because like I said, everybody I have here, except for one, is a first-round pick. And the one that's not a first-round pick was pick number 32 when there was 30 teams. So
yeah, okay.
I think of maybe that weird time there's 31 teams. But first one I want to talk about is Brian Urlacher.
He's got some questionable politics.
Yes, he does. But as a football player, Brian Urlacher, he went to New Mexico and he played this weird kind of hybrid safety linebacker position. Mm-hmm. But physically,
it's like what Michigan does now with their defensive ends. They're not in the dirt. They're usually like linebacker defensive end guys.
Yeah, but Urlacher, they were like, this guy has all the talent in the world, but is it going to translate to the NFL? When I was doing research, I was looking into it. And I'm going to go through this draft, Ty. So this is the 2000 draft, all right? I'm going to go through the top 10 picks, okay?
Okay.
Number one, Courtney Brown, defensive end out of Penn State to the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Number two, LeVar Arrington, Penn State. He went to the Redskins.
Yep.
He was a good player. Yeah. Samuels, offensive tackle to the Redskins. Peter Warwick, Florida State to the Bengals.
God. He was supposed to be so good. He was so good at Florida State, man. That's one you don't blame on them. They were taking a good shot there.
Jamal Lewis, running back to the Ravens. Corey Simon, defensive tackle to the Eagles. Thomas Jones, remember him, running back to the Cardinals. Plaxico Burress, wide receiver to the Steelers. And then Brian Urlacher. All those guys were taken in front of Brian Urlacher.
Wow, that's wild. And I think the only one that I would eat... And LeVar Arrington played the same position.
Yeah. The only person, Brian Urlacher is the only person in that entire first round of that draft to be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
The only one. So okay. You're right. There's a lot of questionable things about
it. So when he got hair, when he like started using whatever that product was.
Yeah.
His politics got questionable.
I'm going to jump all the way to 2017. Okay.
Okay.
And this was a draft. The top pick in the draft is Myles Garrett, who I don't think anybody...
He's awesome.
But there were kind of three quarterbacks that were looked at in this draft. One was Mitchell Trubisky, who was picked number two.
Yeah, which the Bears traded up from three.
Yes.
Like they wouldn't be able to get him at three.
Deshaun Watson was the other one.
Okay.
Who was picked 12. And then the third one was a quarterback out of Texas Tech by the name of Patrick Mahomes.
It's pretty good. Pretty good football player.
Now, people probably don't remember this at all, but everybody was saying that it was a gimmicky offense, and yeah, he's got a good arm, but is it going to translate to the NFL? Well, Andy Reid made Kansas City move up 17 slots to number 10 to pick him. And there's an account I follow on Blue Sky called Freezing Cold Takes, and it's from Adam Schefter or something like that, going, this is a bad pick. F to the Kansas City Chiefs.
I remember when they took him, I thought, what separates him from Cliff Kingsbury or Graham Harrell, who ran that offense? I couldn't have been more wrong.
Yeah. Now I'm going to go back to 2011. And you had a defensive end out of Wisconsin who people felt like, again, he's got the physical attributes, but he's probably not. He's going to be a good NFL player, not a great NFL player. All right. And this was the same draft. Cam Newton and Von Miller were the top two picks of this draft.
Two good picks there.
AJ Green from the Bengals. That's
man.
But the Houston Texans, who already had a defensive end, God, who did they have at the time?
Was it Clowney?
It might have been Clowney. Yeah.
Huh. I don't know.
Decided to take a chance on the guy by the name of JJ Watt.
Pretty good, too. And the opposite of Brian Urlacher, an awesome dude.
Yes, yes. JJ Watt's a great dude. Yeah. I happen to actually think, because I see him a lot more, that his brother may actually be a better player. But JJ Watt is one of the greatest defensive players of his generation.
100%. Talk about a dude as big as him, too. He was so fast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So those guys I kind of talked about in that there was all these, they were drafted high because they had the physical gifts, but it was, oh, are they going to have shortcomings? They're going to have this. Every guy just listed there, including Patrick Mahomes, is a Hall of Fame player right now.
100%. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, you can just go back to the Super Bowl for him this past year. And I know people, oh, the Chiefs get all the calls, blah, blah, blah. Patrick Mahomes, the way he calmly guided them down the field to score that game and threw a perfect ball on that last pass. Like, the dude, he couldn't have been, I think if he was drafted by anybody else, it wouldn't have worked. But man, oh man, is he making it work in the NFL. And
I tell my son this all the time, too. A lot of times with these quarterbacks, they start immediately. Patrick Mahomes sat for a year.
Jordan Love, who's not Patrick Mahomes at all, but he sat for 2 years.
He's pretty good, though.
You hate him, though, because you're a Vikings fan.
Yes, I do. No, I hate the fact that the Vikings are going to get a third all-generational talent while I have Sam freaking Bradford.
The Packers.
Or Packers, I'm sorry, yeah. Well, I have Sam Bradford for a year, not whoever the hell I have this
Sam
year.
Darnold.
Darnold, yeah. Hey, could have talked about Bradford for bad.
Again, I adore J.J. McCarthy. Ugh. He's a quarterback of the championship, national champion Michigan.
I'm going to have
to. I think that would be an overpick if we took him.
I agree, but I know it's going to happen.
Well, if you want a quarterback, Minnesota Vikings, if anybody's listening, again, I love J.J. McCarthy. Trade up and take Jaden Daniels if you can.
Jacksonville, who did need a defensive end in that draft with J.J. Watt, they picked right ahead of Houston. Do you know who they picked? Blaine Gabbert.
Oh, man. I remember watching him at Mizzou because he's a local product. And it's like, he's good, but 11th overall pick, he's not that good.
No, not at all. So I'm going to go to the 2001 draft. All right. This is a draft that Michael Vick was picked number one overall.
And again, Michael Vick did his time. And for what he did, people need to let go of that. Michael Vick was generational talent.
Michael Vick is my favorite football player I've ever
seen. He's definitely in my top five of all time here in football players.
Yeah. Now, the San Diego Chargers, who had the number five pick, they kind of needed a quarterback, but Michael Vick was really the only big quarterback in that draft at the top. Everybody looked at it. He was no doubt number one pick. So they went with LaDainian Tomlinson.
Good pick.
Now, that's not who I'm talking about. Pick. Yeah, he's he's probably the second best running back behind
Barry Sanders,
yeah, that I think. But it was like, okay, again, not as great of a quarterback class. Right after LaDainian, Richard Seymour was picked.
Man, that's a good pick. Those are two really good picks in a row.
So at the top of the second round, the 32nd pick of the draft, or the first pick of the second round, the Chargers decided, okay, we need a quarterback. Drew Brees is available.
They did him dirty after his rookie contract.
Yeah, he was very, very good at Purdue, and Purdue had not been good for a long time. But the problem was, Ty, is he was too short. He's only 6 foot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Barry Sanders was also too short when he came into the NFL.
Now, Drew Brees, this is kind of cheating in a way, but Drew Brees did injure his shoulder, and famously super genius football man, Nick Saban.
Yeah, coach of the Dolphins.
He was head coach of the Dolphins, and Brees was a free agent, but so was Dante Culpepper. Saban went with Culpepper. The Saints took Brees, and if it wasn't for Tom Brady, Drew Brees would have every passing record.
Yeah, I think so. Drew Brees is one of those guys who he knew where to put the football. He knew how to place it. He knew to get it out of his hands quick. He did this at Purdue, too. That's the thing. Like, I believe he took Purdue, possibly. Did they go to the Rose Bowl while I was there? Was unheard of at the time.
And I remember when they did, because this was, my wife had been out of college a few years, but she was early in her career, and she went to Purdue, as we've said.
Yes, yeah.
And there was an old guy at General Electric that she had done some work with, and he was like, I'm going to the Rose Bowl. He's like, because the next time they go to the Rose Bowl, I'll be dead.
I know. Oh, my.
And he has since passed away, and Purdue has not been to the Rose Bowl. So,
hey, it was nice seeing Michigan in it this year. So.
Well, they were in the national title game.
Yeah, but they played in the Rose Bowl prior to that. It had been a while since I'd seen them in the Rose Bowl. I'd actually seen them win a Rose Bowl.
Now, how much I'm reaching with the whole Lawrence Taylor being at number two, being highly underrated.
He is, though. Nobody ever talks about him.
I'm going to talk about the number three pick that I think is incredibly underrated. And I remember, I don't know why I was so invested in this, because he didn't play for the Vikings. He's from Minnesota.
You just get invested in these things. Why was I invested in Cade McCown?
Yeah.
Or whatever the hell his name is.
Yeah. So this is the 04 draft, the draft that Eli Manning was not going to play for the Chargers.
Oh, yeah. Refused.
He did get picked by the Chargers, though.
And it was like with a trade in hand.
Yeah. Yeah. They ended up trading to the Giants, who drafted Phillip Rivers. Mm-hmm. This is also the draft that saw Sean Taylor, Kellen Winslow Jr. That's Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, God.
But there was a receiver who everybody said is the greatest receiving prospect anybody had ever seen, named Larry Fitzgerald.
I remember watching him in his bowl game at Pitt and thinking, oh, my God, this guy is better than Jerry Rice, I thought, when I saw him play, which is blasphemy.
Yeah. Well, and again, Arizona did not need Larry Fitzgerald, did not need
a receiver. But you got to take it.
Well, why can't I think of his name? The head coach of Minnesota, and then he was the head coach of Arizona. Dennis Green. Love me, Dennis Green, though. But when Dennis Green was the head coach of the Vikings, Larry Fitzgerald was a ball boy.
Uh-huh.
And he told management, we are taking this guy. Now, I'm not ready to say this about Ja'Marr Chase yet, but the Bengals definitively needed an offensive lineman.
But you got to take a talent like that.
And the offensive lineman they should have taken was taken right after by Detroit. My son would know his name. And he's great.
Penny Sewell?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He's great.
Oh, but yeah.
Joe Burrow went into the Bengals and said, get me Ja'Marr Chase.
Mm-hmm.
They
play together in college, yes, too.
This is what the big rumor now is we're going to get Justin Jefferson for 1 year. I'm like, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Dennis Green said, and Larry Fitzgerald. A legendary career. It breaks my heart he doesn't have a Super Bowl.
Well, and that's the thing, when they played Pittsburgh in that Super Bowl, I remember thinking, because like Pittsburgh got out to a pretty big lead at the start of that game, and I was like, oh, it's a bummer that Larry Fitzgerald isn't going to win, and he didn't, but he kept that team damn game.
He had a great game. He had a great
yes. Super Bowl. He's the type of, you know who Larry Fitzgerald is? He's the Tony Gwynn of football.
Mm-hmm.
Just consistently electric his entire
career. Yeah, no, that's a great example. The Tony Gwynn, yeah. So the 1998 draft, this is, I think, the player who was most done dirty, including Aaron Rodgers, in any draft. I mean, in Aaron Rodgers.
Who Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, in Aaron Rodgers' draft, there was only two quarterbacks. Okay.
Screw that guy. Yeah. I remember, you called my dad and I when they were drafted, and we were both upset, and you're like, what a good pick. Now, granted, you were right. Aaron Rodgers was fine, but I hate Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I do too. And this draft, this is a draft with Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf,
Charles Woodson.
You had Fred Taylor in this draft, Takeo Spikes.
Ugh.
But there was, and I'm trying to see any receivers. Yeah, nobody had taken a receiver yet, but there was definitively, Ty, a can't-miss prospect in this draft.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
And that was Randy Moss.
And he slid to your Minnesota Vikings.
21 pick, the 21st pick.
God, I can't believe he lasted that long in the draft.
Kevin Dyson was a receiver picked ahead of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, just slip. And look, I love Randy Moss.
It's like Warren Sapp.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Warren could have said that. But Randy Moss, I mean, I just said Larry Fitzgerald, I think, is the second best receiver ever. I think Randy Moss is the third best receiver ever.
He might be the most athletic receiver to ever play football.
But Jerry Rice. And this is when I'll say, I think Jerry Rice is the greatest draft pick in NFL history, even including Tom Brady.
I thought you were going to say Andrew Luck, so this is interesting.
No. Andrew Luck, again, like Ja'Marr Chase, I think that I like Marvin Harrison Jr. in the upcoming draft. I think these guys are going to make
the most sure bet in the draft. Yeah.
So, again, I was cheating, but this is the 85 draft. The number one pick in this draft was Bruce Smith.
Hey, great pick. Great pick. Generational pick. Yeah.
Minnesota Vikings Hall of Famer Chris Dolman was the number four pick.
Very good pick.
And as they were looking, as this draft was going on, everybody knew Jerry Rice was a very, very good pick. But Jerry Rice played at Mississippi Valley State.
Yeah.
All right. He didn't play against the competition, supposedly. They were afraid his hands weren't the right size, all these other things. So you had the New York Jets that needed a receiver. They drafted Al Toon.
Oh, Al Toon was good too, yeah. though, man. Like
the Bengals, who needed a receiver, drafted Eddie Brown. And Bill Walsh, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And Bill Walsh saw something was up, so traded up. They were, I think they had the last pick, traded up into the number 16 pick to grab Jerry Rice. And when I was doing research on this, everybody was talking about how this was one of the dumbest things they could have done. Why are they doing this? They already have John Taylor. The 49ers are already a powerhouse. You're giving away this draft capital for essentially a Division II football player.
Ugh. Greatest receiver to ever play the game.
Dude. I think he's, if you want to talk about offensive football player, I think he's the greatest offensive football player to ever play.
He's otherworldly. The things he could do on a football field, the way he made Joe Montana and Steve Young these Hall of Fame quarterbacks, the stuff he did. John Taylor, who is a Hall of Famer as well, the way he essentially made him just a number two receiver on one of the greatest teams that ever. Like, I can definitely, your argument is not way out of left field with this. It's not something where you're like, oh, I just hate Tom Brady, so I'm going to say something crazy about it. Like, I think, and to get him in the middle of the first round is masterful. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's like the Seahawks drafting all these great secondary players in the fourth, fifth, and sixth round.
And I didn't pull them all up, but like Jerry Rice, I think he caught a pass in every game for like 12 straight years.
Yeah, he had some wild record like that. And it was normal to see him get 100 catches in a season.
He had a total of almost 23,000 receiving yards.
And this was when football was like, yeah, it wasn't today. Run. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't today. And it's just it was considered this big, risky pick. And the 49ers were an embarrassment of riches. So why are they doing this? And on a project player, I read somewhere that somebody called him.
Yeah, and that's crazy.
I mean, it wasn't this year. It was the year before, though, when the Eagles and the 49ers were playing in the NFC title game in Philadelphia. The Eagles won that game. I remember beforehand, they were introducing some luminaries, and one of them was Jerry Rice, and everybody at the Eagles stadium was booing. And out of his pocket, this bag, and he pulls out of that bag one ring, two rings, three rings, four rings.
Good for him.
And Jerry Rice was not Randy Moss. He wasn't a big talker, stuff like that. But man, I was like, you get yours, Jerry.
And it was crazy, like, because at the end of his career, he played for Seattle.
Yeah.
And then he played for the Raiders. And it was just so weird to, because like you know, you put these guys with these teams that you, and it was always the 49ers with him. I do want to say we'd be remiss if we did not mention, if we're going to talk about guys like this, and he's not the player that Jerry Rice is, but Lamar Jackson was the last pick of the first round.
You're right. He should be a receiver.
Yeah, they wanted him to play receiver, and it's like, well, we don't want to. This guy he's a gimmicky quarterback and 2-time MVP now. I understand the Ravens haven't won a Super Bowl with him, but Lamar Jackson is one of the best modern quarterbacks.
Oh, he absolutely is. So before we leave here, Ty, like I said, the draft's in a couple of days, and you don't always do like a mock draft, but I want to tell me who's a can't miss player, who's going to be way overdrafted, and is there a diamond in the rough?
So the way over draft one, I've already mentioned, it's going to be J.J. McCarthy, be it if Washington takes him at two, or if the Vikings trade up. I've heard the Giants are going to trade up again. I rooted for the kid for 3 years. This is not me saying I hate him, but he's going to be overdrafted. So J.J. McCarthy will be the overdrafted pick. The can't miss prospect, you've mentioned it. I've been talking about it all along. It's Marvin Harrison Jr. He is the best receiver to come out of college. And
probably since Moss.
I was going to say, you may say it's blasphemous. I think he's already as good as, if not better than, Jamar Chase Jefferson. No. So
I agree.
I mean, even watching them against Michigan last year, it's like, okay, if they don't throw the ball to Marvin Harrison Jr., Michigan has a chance in this game. All right, like, let him get his, but guard everybody else. That kid is an amazing talent. All these people like, oh, he doesn't want to do work. He doesn't have to do any of that. And then a diamond and a rough. I mean, I want to say Blake Corum. I want to say Junior Colson. I want to say Mike Sainer still. Like, Michigan ran a pro-style defense last year, so much so that the most points they gave up in a game was 24 to Ohio State. Michael Penix Jr., who was a Heisman finalist and Washington's explosive number one offense in the country, only scored 13 points against Michigan's defense. So if you can grab a junior Colson late in the later rounds, or a guy like Mike Sainer still, or go after Josh Wallace or Chris Jenkins, all these guys have this amazing pedigree and they come from this just absolutely dominant defense. So if you want me to, but I will say take any one of those, but if you want me to pick a quote unquote diamond in the rough or a guy that people are going to undervalue, I think it's Blake Corum. He is a pro. He stuck around Michigan. He achieved everything he said he was going to do. The guy is a touchdown scoring machine. He's one of the best cutters I've ever seen play, and he does not fumble the football. I think he only put it on the ground a handful of times. When he did, it was a shock. I'm going to be a total homer, and I'm going to go with Blake Corum from Michigan as the underrated cat.
All right. Well, when Mel Kiper retires and they need you to go on ESPN to do this talk, where are they going to find it?
Yeah, please. You can find me at Facebook and Instagram, TYKULIK, all lowercase. But come read my stuff on Seedsing, SEEDSING.com. Like you said, I don't do a mock draft, but I usually pick five surefire things and five busts, which, sorry, Drake May, but you're going to end up on my bust thing when I do that. Check that out, Seedsing, SEEDSING.com. You can hear me on a few episodes of Chucklehead Chat, hosted by our buddy Glenn Adams, wherever you get podcasts. Listen to First Watch Rewatch. Check out our Patreon. Most importantly, though, listen to me on this podcast, the Ex-Millennial Man podcast. Rate, review us. Tell all your friends about us. And as always, Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, repeat all that. Seed saying Ex-Millennial Man. We're coming up here on episode 400. So I'm going to have some special stuff planned for that. But enjoy the draft, people. Enjoy we said. Come at us. Tell me why you know, we're wrong. I'm happy to hear it. I specifically wanted to drive some conversation with this.
Well, and I do want to give a shout out to my buddy Dan Conley as an undrafted gem. Yeah. Longest kick return in NFL history for a lineman.
Yeah.
And he won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he's got a Super Bowl ring. So. Yeah.
He was, shouts out Dan.
He was on that team where Seattle didn't run the ball.
Yeah.
He was on that Patriots team.
Yeah, where Malcolm Butler got the pick on the goal line.
Yep. All right. So with all that being said, we thank you for yours. Anything else that you may use to listen to the Ex-Millennial Man podcast? Remember, we're here every Saturday for free, wherever on your fine podcasting shows. And Ty, I'll see you next year at the combine.
Sounds good, my man. Stay fresh, cheese bags.
क्षणास पूजिले अथांग स्वप्न लोचनी कणा कणात देखिले तुझे स्वरूप दर्पणी.
The Ex-Millennial Man podcast is a production of SeedSane.com, fully owned by R.D. Kulik & Associates, LLC. Producers Ty Kulik and Ryan Kulik, adequately engineered by Ryan Kulik.